Hello, this is Heather Cleary, the regular host of No More Silence, joining you again after several episodes with our terrific guest hosts, Shaima and Amanda. This is episode 5 of season 2, titled Between the Zip Codes. This episode is dedicated to a focused research project by Fearless Writers that has resulted in a conference presentation at the Community Writing Conference in Detroit in October 2025 and an accepted publication in the journal Qualitative Social Work. This project would not be possible without the original seniors from Rogers' early research and writing on social separation, 2016 and 2017. This episode is dedicated to Alyssa Crittenden, Austin Allen, Janae Johnson, and Shakira Hudspeth. In this episode, we will be hearing the written work of 5 University of Toledo graduate student members of Fearless Writers, both in social work and medicine, who were given 5 writing prompts to encourage creative writing about experiences of childhood neighborhood segregation and experiences of a predominantly white university in the United States. These students, co-authors, investigators, wrote short, raw poetry pieces for each prompt, and their work will be shared 2 pieces each. We will also be joined by George Thomas from the Fair Housing Center to learn more about Zip Code Matters documentary and the Ode to the Code poetry contest held annually in Toledo. In 2018, Richard Rothstein was interviewed extensively about his book, The Color of Law, Forgotten History of How Our Government Segregated America. In this book, he writes about housing policies in the 1930s and 1940s, where federal housing agencies introduced coded maps to mark investment risk, falsely attributing to neighborhoods of color, and these maps were used by lenders to deny loans. Through these policy practices, neighborhoods were systematically strangled from resources over decades, and any chance of building generational wealth vanished. At the very same time of Rothstein's book publication, another book, Blind Spot, Hidden Bias of Good People by Banaji and Greenwald, was enlightening the public about how implicit bias is also at the heart of health disparities. Implicit bias is when we hold on to stereotypes and unconsciously let large-scale discrimination inform our actions. According to David Williams, a recognized expert on social influences of health, neighborhood segregation is the fundamental cause of health disparities in the United States.
Hi, my name is Giovanna Goins, and I am a University of Toledo alum. I was in the Masters of Social Work program and interned with the Fearless Writers. I graduated in 2023, and I'm now a clinical specialist for a community mental health agency. And today I'll be reading my piece called Three Besties from Alternate Worlds. Three besties from alternate worlds, different language, cultures, and backgrounds, two more intertwined by their heritage and culture, differences made aware with the types of words floating around their heads. Our neighborhood is split down the middle, us on one side and them on the other. Black and brown, but different in culture. We all go to the same school, the school down the street, where everyone looks like me. Beads, ballers, and braids. I like it here, safe and secure. Seeing the kids that don't look like me live at the hospital because they don't live near me or near my cousins at all.
Hello, everyone. My name is DeMarco Hill. I am a licensed social worker, currently in a therapist position. And the first piece that I'm going to read is called Personality. Personality 1, black man around people that make him comfortable. Personality 2, black man around people that make him uncomfortable. Personality 3, don't be scared of me. Please don't judge me. I'm a great person, but you have to take the chance and maybe be uncomfortable to see. Personality 4, guarded me. You will not hurt me. I know that you're probably wondering, and the answer is no. I don't have DID, dissociative identity disorder. Why can't I just be me? It's hard being the one that always works the hardest just for it not to get you anywhere. I know I don't know everything, but I want to be the person to call myself ignorant. Because I am the only person that can fix this. If I don't put myself out there to learn, then how will I ever know? Yes, I am a character. I know. I'm not crazy. Spend a day in my life. So if I act different, you will know why.
This piece is by Deja Banks. Growing up. Who can I talk to? I was never good at making friends or even blending in. I was too black for the white kids and not black enough for the black kids. Maybe if my skin was two shades darker or lighter, growing up wouldn't have been so awkward. I would watch all the other kids fit in with their social groups, go outside, play every day, but nobody ever knocked on our door to see if we wanted to come out and play. Not too many friends growing up. Maybe that's why I'm so big on togetherness. I know how it feels to be left out, excluded, but still longing for someone to say hi.
This is DeMarco Hill again, and I'm going to be reading a piece from Mitchell Pay. At this time, he was a medical student at the University of Toledo Medical Center. His piece is called Good People. We all like to think that we're good people, me included. I think that my opinions are moral and that I will always do the right thing. Treat everyone equally and do everything for the common good. I think that I don't act differently around different groups of people in my life, and I truly wish that it was like that. However, I don't know. Of course, I can goof off at home or with my friends and act professionally in front of teachers, but I don't think that this is the question that is being asked. Do you act differently around different groups of people in your life? And to answer it, I truly don't know.
This piece is by Mary McDonald, titled Neighborhood Segregation. Nostalgia takes me back to my childhood, home and memories. Echoes of young belly laughs running through the house into the street with the neighborhood boy. Hide and go seek behind the maple trees. My mother is tending to the garden in the backyard and is keeping an eye on her daughter, who was playing around, and the big brother who was learning tricks on his bike in the street. Midsummer afternoon, sweat from playing in the green grass yard, blessings and privilege that come from the feelings of nostalgia, a father that drives to work and comes home to eat a meal that was prepared, a mother who has a summer off from teaching at the local school.
Joining me today in the studio is George Thomas from the Fair Housing Center. Hello, George. Can you introduce yourself for us and the role that you play at the Fair Housing Center?
Hi, thanks so much for having me. My name is George Thomas. I'm the CEO and General Counsel for the Fair Housing Center. I'm a career public interest attorney. That means I work in the nonprofit space and help people who can't afford an attorney, and I focus on housing issues in particular.
For those unfamiliar with the work of the Fair Housing Center, what does the center do for the community of Toledo?
Yeah, that's a good question. I appreciate that because not everyone knows the Fair Housing Center. What we focus on is civil rights in fair housing spaces. So what that means is, to give you a concrete example, we had someone who contacted us that said they wanted to buy a home. That's the American dream, right? That's home ownership. She was struggling to get through the process. She thought things were going well at one point. The appraisal came back fine. She had the money, for the loan. The next thing she knows, the mortgage originator was giving her problems, putting up barriers, and then she felt like she had to move on. Later, she found out got a notice that the loan was actually withdrawn, or in other words, her application for the loan was withdrawn. She said, "Well, I didn't really withdraw. I just felt like I couldn't move forward." We investigated further, found more evidence, and filed some claims for discrimination in that case. She was a black woman trying to buy a home in a historically redlined neighborhood. We were successful in that case in pursuing her civil rights in housing. We take a lot of cases like that, civil rights cases related to disability as well. So anytime someone's being denied housing because of race, color, disability, national origin, familial status, that's the backbone of what the Fair Housing Center does, is protect those basic civil rights in housing.
Tell us a little bit about the film Zip Code Matters and the project Ode to the Code.
So the backbone of what we do, like I said, is protecting civil rights. But to truly advance the goals of the Fair Housing Act, to really make a difference in our community, we need our community to understand the importance of these issues and the history of things like redlining and how your neighborhood powerfully impacts every aspect of your life. Think about how your home affects you. It affects access to job opportunities. It affects your access to family nearby, transportation, health and safety. Your home affects everything. Your neighborhood affects everything. So that's what Zip Code Matters, the video, is about. It's easy to find on YouTube by Google searching that phrase, Zip Code Matters. And the Ode to the Zip Code Poetry Contest is a way for our community to come together and really think about place and neighborhood and where they live in a different way. So we get poetry submissions from all across the community. Then at one event, everyone comes together that recites a poem that's based on their zip code. And what you see at the event then is these different zip codes. People are saying very different things from different neighborhood areas. It really brings the community together in a different way. And it also gives us a chance to speak to a part our community and a broad sector of it about fair housing issues and really try to move the needle on making a difference in our community with fair housing access and breaking down barriers to fair housing choice.
From your perspective, in what ways has the history of redlining been hidden and why?
I think the thing that people don't understand about redlining and the way that it's sort of been forgotten or dismissed is that it was very, very recent in terms of human development. So if you think about the 1930s when and late 1920s, when we see that redlining maps and discrimination based on neighborhood and race were very obvious and prevalent, that was a time that our communities like Toledo, for example, were really planned out. The neighborhoods were developed in a certain way. And in terms of human development, that was really just yesterday. It was just a generation ago, essentially. So we're now living in the communities, in the neighborhoods that this previous generation planned out, developed in a certain way. And now, when you look at those older redlining maps, you'll see that those same trends or different kinds of trends continue now. And we shouldn't expect that they wouldn't continue because there really hasn't been a concerted effort to overcome the challenges that those practices created. We have to get back to those same neighborhoods. We have to invest in them. We have to really make a real effort to overcome the challenges that redlining created. In those same neighborhoods that were redlined, we have more incidents of asthma and lead poisoning, lack of access to opportunities. There's more blight, more disintegrated housing in those areas. So if we care about those issues, we need to make progress on fixing those problems that were caused by redlining.
How does historical redlining impact youth gun violence today?
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful, wonderful question, first of all, because it's not something that people maybe connect right away. You know, gun violence and youth and then, you know, redlining as well. So understand that if you had a system that disinvested in certain neighborhoods, caused there to be a deteriorated housing stock, which then causes more crime, lack of access to opportunities. Property values go down, property taxes pay for things like schools and other resources in the area. So the housing values are dropping because of redlining. You have fewer resources, fewer tools that you can use to solve problems in the area. And that creates a climate, creates a challenge then for those communities that ultimately increases all kinds of crime, all kinds of societal problems, but then also including gun violence as well.
How is the Fair Housing Center changing the narrative of inner city Toledo?
So we're working in a lot of different ways to try to change the narrative. one just example, and I gave some earlier examples about how we directly assist victims of housing discrimination. Other examples, though, is we now have a new program called our Housing Conditions and Neighborhood Reinvestment Program, where we have attorneys that directly help tenants in those areas with housing conditions issues. We know redlining led to disinvestment, which leads to a decline in the housing stock. We also know the same neighborhoods, investors kind of tend to sweep in and buy up properties before others maybe can become homeowners and achieve the American dream. And then they don't always maintain those properties well. So our attorneys now will take cases pro bono, meaning they don't charge a fee for those, and file rent escrow cases or do things to enforce basic rights in those areas. And then we also have those attorneys advocate for reinvestment in those areas. So I would describe changing the narrative as, let's move away from just saying these neighborhoods are troubled, to a question of how do we push for reinvestment in these neighborhoods? How do we do problem solving? How do we reinvest in these neighborhoods that were redlined?
Why is taking control of the narrative important to the health of all of Toledo?
I think that question is again, excellent, but it's one that's really, really broad. So if we can change the current narrative might be something like, these neighborhoods were abandoned, maybe investors are coming in, maybe the people living there didn't respect the neighborhood or don't want to take care of it. That narrative, I don't think, is complete. That narrative is not really true. The true narrative is there was a system of disinvestment, a system of devaluing these certain neighborhoods. And if you understand that historical context, then you can really try to work on true solutions to the issues in our neighborhoods, including things like gun violence, including other increased crime and a lack of other resources, food deserts, you know, all of the above. If we try to work on solutions to those issues without understanding the history of redlining, without the fair housing perspective, I suggest the solution is never going to be complete. It's never going to really have the right emphasis and the right understanding and the right push to truly change things in those areas without that historical context, without that background of redlining and fair housing.
Thank you, George, for coming in today to the studio.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm always happy to do this.
Hello, everyone. It's DeMarco Hill again. I'm going to read a piece, another piece of mine. It's called 75 South. Step outside. What do you see? I hop on 75 South and I'm in a whole new world. What do I say? What do I do? I choose this because I needed to get away. If it is not reality, then why do it? I can't cheat myself. It is crazy that I always go away to see different people. But the way my cards were dealt, that's something I couldn't control nor help. My PWI opened my eyes. Black is not just black. There's depth in such a color. All I really had was the stereotypes, the biases, and experiences talked down to me from my mother. Uncomfortable, to say the least. I have to prove myself constantly. This is draining. I feel unwelcomed, excluded. I would never want to make anyone feel this way. No empathy, no understanding, let alone a care. I knew it would be this way. I was just hoping that you would prove me wrong today.
This piece is by Deja Banks, titled PWI. Everyone knows each other, it seems like. It's big groups of people. However, it's subgroups of everyone. There is someone for everyone, someone for us to all talk to, hang, and even be friends with. All the colors of the rainbow. We all fit in together. People had friends of all different colors and social status. We all just fit the puzzle perfectly.
This is DeMarco Hill reading another piece from Mitchell Pay. This piece is entitled Bridge. In college, there was a bridge. We called it a bridge of gentrification. A redlining bridge, per se. One side was the city jail, the project housing complex, the police station, and really nothing more. On the other side of the bridge were the banking districts, the college, the restaurants, and more. I don't think that there's a better redlining definition than where I went to college, where a literal bridge separated by a highway defined the status of a person or the quality of schooling a person will receive. I think growing up and going to school in the city really defined that true equality does not equal equity. Just because someone has access to a school doesn't mean that they have the same resources. And just because someone has access to a library doesn't mean that they have the same resources. Just because someone has access to a grocery store doesn't mean that they have the same resources. I truly believe that redlining has created my ignorance on what others face and the hardships that they have that I never experienced.
This piece is by Mary McDonald, equipped with research. I think I act very differently than those who are from my hometown. I am equipped with research, personal experiences, one degree, and data to support my beliefs. I do not listen to a particular TV show, which is so crazy that it will leave my blood curdling, and I have to take a lap around the kitchen before I go back into the family room. This is frustrating since I am the odd man out, but I experience this still with white privilege, since some have always felt left out or suppressed by the majority thought/vote. I thought to hold my tongue. When I came back for a break, since I struggle to select my words wisely, but with silence comes a witness to fight and not telling the teacher. And this piece is called Shaking, I Was Shaking. Shaking, I Was Shaking. I couldn't believe this amount of freedom. Walking around on the first day without anyone questioning my whereabouts, I like this. I needed this. I wanted to do this. I'm going to thrive. I just know it. Oh, where are the me's? I see not one person with my skin tone. Oh my goodness. I feel the stares. Every class I walk into, they stare in fear or out of uncomfortability. I feel so out of place. I saw me. I saw one. I see a group of them. They walk into a room. I see the sign, BSU. What is the Black Student Union? That place saved me. I had finally found a small home.
Thank you for listening, and we hope these stories continue to inspire conversation, connection, and understanding in our community. We would like to thank WGTE and the producer of Voices Around Us, Chris Pfeiffer, for the opportunity to share our stories. Thank you to the Fair Housing Center and the contributions of the Fearless Writers community. This episode wouldn't have been possible without the support from the University of Toledo Social Work Program. And looking ahead to episode 6, we will be visited again by the student-led poetry group Rhythm and Rhyme, mentored by Tina DeBoard, librarian and media specialist at Rogers High School. This is Heather Cleary, and thank you for joining us on No More Silence.
WGTE, Voices Around Us.